Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Hypno Fairy Godmother Show with Shirley Yance, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome again to the Hypno Fairy Godmother Show. I'm Shirley, a clinical hypnotherapist here in Southern California and a glitter and rainbow girl going way back. My specialty is working with the LGBTQIA community, and I wouldn't have it any other way. So I thought at this time, you know, things have been going a little weird outside and things have been a little up and down. So I thought we needed to hear some fun, inspirational stories or just something that'll bring maybe a smile to your face and a giggle in your heart. So before we get going, you know how we start this show. Make sure you're in a safe place and everybody take that nice deep breath. Hold it. And exhale that smile. And we are ready. This is so great. So as many of you know, we are into Pride season. And, you know, I like to say Pride season because sometimes it tends to veer a little more off of June. And this month, I decided to have people on the show that make me proud and excited to be part of the community. And some of them have some really interesting Pride stories, I'm sure. So today I want you all to meet a couple of wonderful representatives from the Los Angeles House of the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. Hello, sisters.
Hello, Shirley.
Hi there.
How are we doing today?
Well, my underwear is cramping, but I'm fine.
Good. Glad to hear that you're fine.
A stout and starch one.
You know, so would you two like to introduce yourselves?
Hi, my name is Sister Unity, and I am formerly a pimple on the buttocks of a Republican administration from many years ago.
Nice to meet you. And?
I'm Sister Genesee Kwa, and I don't know, not much more to it.
Okay, all right. And for those of people out there that may not have any knowledge of the sisters, which I do not know how that happens, could one of you give me just a little history of how the sisters became as a whole and then the Los Angeles House individually?
Well, as a whole, it was started by gay men. So that was a lot of holes.
Yes. Yes.
But originally, it was founded in 1877 as the manufacturer of Jell-O molds. Now, they branched out into savory Jell-Os, or aspic, as we like to call it, up through the early 20th century. Later, when San Francisco became a mecca for the gay community, aspic just dropped the pick part, and, well, you can
that does happen.
True story. Oh, you mean the actual history?
The actual history of you know, the
maybe
whole.
Whenever they were going out in, what was it, 1979, and walking through the Castro and saying, you know what, we don't want to have this kind of only representation of this cookie cutter, you know, masculine, hyper, like, well, masculine man. So they donned some nun's habits and walked out there. We had four founders, but yeah.
It actually, Jenna's absolutely correct about it starting in San Francisco with the four who went out in these nuns' habits. Where the nuns' habits came from was in Iowa. And Sister, who the man who later went on to become Sister Vicious Power Hungry Bitch, went to an actual convent in Iowa City and borrowed some actual habits from deceased nuns, telling them that they were doing a production of The Sound of Music. He failed to mention that it was an all-male production. They were called a theater group, gay theater group called the Sugar Plum Fairies. So they had those habits and he just never gave them back. Oops. And sometime later, when San Francisco really was burgeoning as a gay capital and a safe space for gay people, he moved and took the nun's habits with him and made friends with a bunch of other homosexuals, of which there were a plethora in the day. And they decided to go out that day, as Sister Jenna said. And they, Jenna said, they were countering the clone, the Castro clone look. And they got such an overwhelming reaction from the public that they thought, well, this is hilarious, clearly, and this is really ripe. And so they decided to reorganize and to make it an actual organization that could use this sarcastic joke, putting a pie in Anita Bryant's face, if you will, of one of the traditional organizations that have oppressed LGBTQ people for centuries, and employing that to do all kinds of gay rights activism. And then, of course, when AIDS hit, they were one of the first organizations to respond to the AIDS crisis. They held the world's first candlelight vigil for HIV and AIDS, and they put out one of the world's first safe sex pamphlets called Play Fair. And this was all in San Francisco for the early years, as Sister Jenna said, starting in 1979, the day before Easter, because they love to get a rise out of people.
Of course.
And then it just continued on until someone had visiting San Francisco saw them and thought, this is a piss, I'm going to take it back home. And they went back home to Sydney, Australia, and founded the second house in the world in Sydney, Australia. And then someone in Seattle came, the man who became Sister Teresa Nervina, did likewise, took it home from San Francisco and started a house in Seattle. And then I think Sister Vish and a couple other nuns went from San Francisco on a jaunt through Europe and helped to found a house in Paris and a house in Berlin.
Wow.
Here in Los Angeles, we started, after all of that, we started in 1995, on December 10th in 1995.
So just about 25 years ago.
Yes, yes.
That's when the LA house was the white face part of it always? Was the white face always a part of the sisters' look? Or did that evolve after a while?
Yes and no.
Okay.
Sister Vicious Power Hungry Bitch, whose name now is Sister Vish Knows, she started out using it. There's some apocryphal stories, and the truth may never be known. But the fact is that when she was a Sugar Plum Fairy, she had used white-face-based drag makeup, and she liked the look and thought she would use it as her sister character. There are those who say also that at the time she was a sex worker, and she was working in particular with the leather community. Her clients were from the leather community, and that she didn't want to seem effeminized to her clientele and throw off her business, and so she disguised herself.
Uh-huh.
But of the three or four who went out that first day, she was the only one who wore the white face. And in fact, when they reorganized, Sister Missionary Position, who had been a seminarian, Catholic seminarian, where he studied Catholic sermons, came up with the name of the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, and has never, ever, ever worn white face. And it's now over 40 years. Others, like the original, I think there were about 12 of the originals, none of them wore whiteface except Vish. And then slowly here and there, one by one, they all picked it up because they thought it was such a sort of awesome, powerful look.
Do all of the houses wear whiteface now, or is it still sort of optional depending on where you live?
Do you know, Jenna?
I mean, I'm pretty sure that in the U.S. and the North America, like, a lot of people wear white face. However, when you go into like England and some other areas there, you'll see that they do not wear it. They wear just their secular face and they put on a habit.
So, So it kind of depends on where you're at by how everyone will look.
That's absolutely right. However, there's an important thing to exception to note that illustrates a really important tenet of who we are and how we do, our underlying philosophy. And the story is this. In San Francisco, where it all began, some 5 to 7 years ago, there was a sister named Sister Baba Ganesh. She was Filipino by birth. And she decided not to do whiteface because she wanted her ethnicity to be upfront and visible and what she presented to the public as her activist creative statement. We employ art and activism equally. We are artist activists or arctivists. So her statement was to go without the white face to show her Filipino ethnicity up front and say, this, as this drag nun, this is who I am and this is my message. And there were some San Francisco sisters who were in whiteface who thought, you know, this isn't what we do. And they took her to task and they chastised her and wagged a finger and all the things that nuns do, saying, you know, this is, you're not a sister if you're not doing the whiteface. And she said, hell you say I'm not. And they said, well, we're going to go and ask Sister Vicious Power Hungry Bitch because she invented it, you know, to get her in trouble.
Right.
So they went to Vish and they said, Sister Vish, Sister Baba Ganesh, no face. And Vish replied, get out your pencils, girls, because this is the important part.
Okay.
The Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence are about creative freedom. And if that is how she imagines her sister character, then that is her sister character, because we are about creative freedom.
That is perfect. I love that part of the story because it is about who you are. And, you know, with the white face, I know that everybody that I've ever seen has a different face. So that's something that you create as you go, or are you given tips or a color, or how do they, you know, how do you come up with that particular part of it?
Well, I know how LA started off, but I would love to hear Jenna tell us how she invented her face because she's always so beautiful.
Why, thank you. So my face honestly started off with kind of a general suggestion from people that were in the house, and I just put it on. And I think that's what we gave for a lot of other people, was that it's kind of your own ability to express what you want to do. Sometimes there are a little bit of color variations and you can say, you know, hey, I want to do something more on these lines or something else. But honestly, I rarely have the same face. I mean, it's, you see my face changing left and right. And I mean, Unity has so many different variations. So I think it's just constant on the line of, it's kind of what we want to express that day and how we want to go about it. You'll see some common things that we take from one face to the next, but it's really up to us. And it doesn't come along over time.
And I've also, you know, can tell, and everybody else can tell, that you have two separate hats.
Catholics call them a coronet.
Yes.
Here in Los Angeles, we call them a hoobie doobie.
Yes.
Because Sister Buffy, around about 2002 or three, she was in a meeting. She couldn't remember what they were. They were called coronets. She said, and so when we go out in the, you know, the things on our head, the hoobie doobie. And immediately I slapped the table. I said, I move that the official name of the cornet be changed to the Hoobie Doobie. Sister Candy was abbess at the time, and the abbess runs the meetings. And she said, is there a second? Someone said, second. She said, all in favor say aye. And it was voted. It was over in a flash. And ever since, it's been. But if you're writing about it, you have to spell it differently every time that you write it.
So, Sister Jenna, is yours also called, I mean, do you have a special name for your headwear?
Well, this is actually San Francisco's coronet. It is the head boobs.
Okay.
When you get to a certain level, you can wear other ones. My hoobie doobie is being furnished right now, so I will have it Friday. But I sport a different one, and every house has a different one that represents their house. I could show you another one that comes from Houston, but yes. So
you just
I'll blather on. You get the other one and show them.
I'm going to get the other one.
Okay, that would be great.
I'll blather on.
Okay, so
I was born a poor child. my mother died early, and I was raised by a pack of wild goose.
Wow.
This is Cornette from the Space City Sisters in Houston.
Okay.
So
technically, because you started there, would you still be able to wear that one? Or now that you're part of the LA house, are you required to wear what the LA house wears?
Well, there's a dynamic on this one. Black males are people who elevate to a certain level, the highest one that you can be in the house. They can choose to wear kind of whichever cornette they would like to wear. It's so suggested that if you're going somewhere where people aren't as familiar with you, or you want to have more of a presence, you wear your own houses. That way you have kind of this unified look, and you know, it makes a little bit more of a statement. But I can wear this one. I can wear several other ones. Like people, different houses will gift a cornet to individuals and stuff like that. So you'll be able to express, you know, different ways. And if you visit that city, and you want to wear that one with that house and stuff, it's copacetic.
Okay, that's great to know. So I know that, you know, right now we are in some crazy times. And so, and I know that most of the events that the sisters do are outside and with the actual public. So how is this house and all the other ones, you know, keeping in touch with the community as a whole?
Well, we've had to forego the annual pigeon juggling.
Such a shame.
It is.
Such a shame.
We were perfectly willing, but the pigeons couldn't get the masks on their little beaks poking through the paper. And I don't know if these masks were made in the U.S., China, or Sweden. But
hard
whoever was making them did not make them pigeon resistant.
We also had to postpone the dildo Pinewood Derby. So.
And that's also quite the shame. Yeah, wow.
It's such a shame. I had just found the perfect formula for silicone wheels.
And then, you know, postponing.
Right.
So since these are the things that you have had to postpone temporarily.
Yes.
What have you been doing to keep them?
Well, my stamp collection has changed the world.
I'm sure it has.
You know, the sisters in Los Angeles, you know, we're near Hollywood and some of us have been in the industry and some of us work in advertising. It's a media heavy town. So we had a bit of luck in that we have members who are really well versed. Some of us are even have their own radio show.
Really? That's amazing.
I don't know her personally. I hear she's nice, but then again, I like peanut butter. So we were lucky that we were able to transition quickly and easily. Other houses have done some more and some less, but online has turned out to be where at first it seemed daunting, and at first people worried that we would lose our presence or just have a here and there appearance on Facebook to catch up. It's actually turned out to be an enormously rich medium for our manifesting, because part of the really, the core of what we do is just appearing in this look, this makeup, this habit, this bizarre, otherworldly, queer persona. As I like to say, manifesting is job one. You show up looking like this in the public, and it says, we're here, we're queer, we're creative, we're other, we're different, we're something you're not used to. Get used to it. It's part of your world, and like it or not, you need to decide and develop what kind of relationship you're going to have with it. Do you inquire and find out about it and see whether you're comfortable with it or not? Or does it make you happy and you engage? Do you hate it and you engage along those lines? All of that is all prompted by our mere presence. So being online is nothing more than projecting an image and a voice. So the message is very easily carried into this medium. So we've been doing things like appearing on other people's shows and creating some of our own. We've had one sister whose name shall remain anonymous did a 10-hour marathon to raise money for a charity that we normally support with events, but neither we nor they could do their regular events.
Exactly.
So we thought, let's do an online marathon of storytelling. There's others. We did memoriams for people who died of COVID-19. There's a memoriam coming up on Friday for Black victims of police violence. At 7 p.m. on Pacific Coast time this Friday. And Jenna, Sister Jenna, actually heads a new online manifestation committee that has projects.
Yes. And we are working on several different ways to engage the community, whether we have Zoom participation where they can come in, interact with us. We are making content where we can send out a message, whether it's something that is, you know, very personal to us, coming with coming out stories or pride experiences. We're doing different reach outs with just comedic purposes to lighten the mood and give people something to be like, oh, we're excited to see what's happening. We're trying to stay just engaged.
And I've noticed that with the presence, the online presence of the Los Angeles houses along with several other of the houses, I've actually got to know some of the other houses better and connected with some of the sisters at other houses. One of the things that I've been talking about is all the virtual prides that are out there. since we, you know, since all the traditional ones have been canceled, that different cities and countries are having virtual prides. And so by having this medium, I've actually, and I've been encouraging other people to look up those virtual prides. You finally get to see stuff that you've never gotten to see before. And it's kind of bringing us a little closer together.
It's an interesting time whenever you can take technology that used to kind of keep us distance, and sometimes people would say you're being separated, and now it's the main tool that we're using to actually connect with others. So that paradigm shift is, it's interesting, you know, and I'm glad we actually have the ability to utilize it.
You know, making the most, and I think that's one of the nice, wonderful things about the sisters is that, you know, here's the opportunity. Let's figure out how, you know, to make your presence known.
I love presence.
I know you do. do you
Someone
have any?
Recently sent me a present of 3 rolls of bright orange toilet paper.
That is a present
because it's like I can wipe with myself.
Exactly. You know, as long as you're color coordinated, that is the most important part.
You know, another present that we got, if you want to consider it, sometimes people don't realize that a sister is someone who created the rainbow flag that we see everywhere. Sister Chanel 2001, who was known as Gilbert Baker, he's the one who put it together, and now we have it as an icon across the world and around her neck.
Exactly. And then there's also the newer flag, which is a little controversial. So I think most people tend to just stick with the traditional one.
I don't know. It really was when it first came out, Shirley. But it's been my perception that over the year or two that it's been out, that the controversy kind of died down. I mean, so often that's what happens. That I know I hate change, which is weird. Look at me. I haven't heard, like, since this round of the Black Lives Matter movement has ignited again, it's been very prominent because Black Lives Matter started again. This round of it rose up again in May, and that just rolled us right into June, Pride Month.
Exactly.
And that flag that has it's the rainbow flag, for those who don't know, with a chevron coming in of black and brown stripes, and then pale blue and pink stripes for the trans flag, sort of coming into the left side of the rainbow to represent these communities that have felt long undervisible, underappreciated in the broader gay community, in the broader LGBTQ community. So what it was controversial, like the people were arguing, well, the rainbow includes everyone. Why do you need to put these stripes in when you're already there? But that I haven't heard that argument made once this time around.
Oh, that's fabulous.
Yeah, people seem to have sort of gone, okay. Because I think what helped is that the rainbow flag, as it had been, didn't disappear. Now we've got both. And we've got the flag and the bear flag and the non-binary flag and the asexual flag and all a plethora. There's a flag for everyone. I'm just thinking of sticking my underwear on a stick and carrying it around.
And that could be your personal flag with the big peace sign in the middle of it.
Orange fart pride.
Yes.
We can highlight that on technology. It's interesting that whenever, now that we have Facebook and social media, you can have this kind of audience with everyone. So that means that anything that you want to discuss and stuff, it can have a lot more fervent kind of approach to it. So you can then put it out there and then it gets a lot more attention.
Exactly, because before you would put something out and it would be kind of a slow roll in on people's opinions. Now you post something, 30 seconds later, everybody's giving you their opinion.
As a sister, I always try to put out.
If in doubt.
Exactly. And right there online, too. Who knew?
Well, I want to put out so people can get to the bottom of what's going on.
Which is very...
Yeah, what's happening?
So what events do you have coming up? I know you mentioned a few, a couple things, but, you know, some in the near future events that people can either watch or listen to online.
We'll be reenacting Gone with the Wind, naked with chickens.
But that is special access.
I can't wait. Those are the very special access.
It's the sister's OnlyFans account, but yeah.
Okay.
Oh my God, we have to make an OnlyFans account, but have it like have pictures of us holding our fans.
Exactly.
Really?
That's the one.
You're an OnlyFans, bitch.
Wow, look at you prepared.
Jenna, you're the one who knows all the upcoming events.
I know I do. Well, all right. So we do have our event on Friday, the In Memoriam for the Black bodies that have been lost.
Very important.
There's also a game show that's happening on Saturday. I know that Sister Unity and I are going to be working on another online West Hollywood Squares thing to bring up. So that'll be happening next month. July-ish. we're putting out a little bit more of things for people to watch and view. But in terms of events for us to have with the connections going on, it takes a little bit more time to kind of integrate the technology and then make it happen. So
there's also another appearance of the sisters on a live streaming radio show. I believe it's very similar in format to this one.
Next Monday.
Yes. This is a special two-parter. It's the first time I've had, a two-part section. I don't know whether you two sisters will be on next week. It's a surprise for all of us.
Also in July, I believe it's the 17th. There's abbreviated version on the 17th in a private forum, and then there's the full show, I believe, on the 19th. We're doing a variation based on our early theatrical production called The History of Religion. And this one will either be The History of Religion adapted for modern times or The History of Christianity as presented by the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. And just like we're doing now, this will be under the premise of being a webinar in which the sisters have gone back to our ancient archives, which are caves in the Sinai Peninsula. Little known real estate deal we had with the San Francisco sisters back in the 70s. We purchased these caves and found all kinds of archives. And we actually have documented actual historical artifacts proving the origins of every known religion on the face of the earth that have been sealed up in clay jars by hermits for the last 5,000 years. And our sisters have just finally deciphered the cuneiform and the Aramaic and the French and translated it all into contemporary languages. So this will be one of the first times in which we're presenting this ancient knowledge of how Christianity actually began. You may not know this, but also we have the records on Judaism. And originally the Torah was a manual for cheese making.
Yeah. Wow.
We should have the island of Lesbos, but we lost that one.
Oh, then you need to get an oracle soon.
Can you go, is that a sex shop?
It actually is. It's one of those in West Hollywood. The oracle.
I mean, I personally love oracle, but I'd rather move on to like anal and rimming.
Oh, okay. Sister Jenna, did you get a little?
No,
that's shocking.
I was just excited, so I smiled underneath this.
My
estheticism.
So what made each of you decide to become sisters?
Okay. Well, I'll go first.
Okay, Sister Jenna.
So I'll get it out the way quickly. I found that being a sister is a perfect kind of merger in terms for how I normally want to interact with my community. I'm someone who I care a lot about individuals. I want to talk to people. I want to make sure people are doing well. I care greatly about LGBTQ issues. I was raised by lesbians, and it's a dynamic I've always had to kind of have the awareness of. Not only am I gay, but like my family is. So by being a sister, it's like I get to have this activism role, this community engagement role. I can be camp as I want. It's just kind of a whole embellishment of, I want to do do better for my community. So I said, this is in line with kind of where I'm going and what I want to do. So let's do it.
That sounds great. It's important to have a solid reason, so of the things that the sisters do, Sister Jenna, what is your favorite thing that the sisters do as a group or as an event?
So I always think back more along the lines of who we help and reaching out to organizations that help homeless LGBT youth is something that's always near and dear to me. Every fundraiser that I have done, except for the ones coming up, but yes, they have all been dedicated to different programs that raise money for other people, whether it be the Alley 40 Center, the Tony's Place, Hatch Youth in Houston. It's just, it's important for me to kind of have that engagement and also to help them.
That's wonderful. So, Sister Unity, I've heard rumors that you're one of the original sisters of the LA House, and Sister Unity wasn't your full name before.
This is correct. My full name is Akhenaten, and I was released from my sarcophagus in 1929 by a British archaeologist named Lord Snowworthy.
You look fabulous.
He pried my sarcophagus open, and my mummy let out a 4,000-year-old queef. And with that queef, I was brought back to life, unwrapped from my bandages, which I promptly made into a chiffon simple shift until I could get to some kind of store and get myself an off-the-shoulder number.
Well,
so I had originally met the sisters in 1982. I was there visiting my sister and participating in a national speech team tournament.
So your sister.
My biological sister. She was big in the punk movement in San Francisco in the 70s and 80s. And I went to visit her in 82. And we just walked down the street one day and bumped into the gay pride parade. And she was like, oh yeah, I heard about this, some kind of gay pride parade. And I hadn't come out to her yet. I'd come out to myself and a couple of friends. And I was just like electrified. I was like, what? They have a what? There's a what? And my mind was just blown by things like I saw gay Native Americans, and I was like, oh my God, that's so cool. And then there were gay Samoans, and I was like, oh my God, that's a thing? And then there were gay dads, which just flipped me the hell out. I was like, wait, you can do that? Where does the fetus gestate? The colon? The sinus? Where? And then the sisters came rolling along, and Sister Boom Boom was sitting in the back like the politicians do in the back of a convertible, waving this honking big dildo at the crowd, blessing them. And the fuck you and the iconoclasm and the gay sarcasm, and yet turned into humor and creativity and weird otherworldly, like who the hell thought up an idea of a hairy-chested, white-faced drag nun? Like it was so... just electrified me. It sat right where my aesthetic sits and where my desire to explode out into the world with uniqueness that would creatively change things for the better. That was what I had brewing inside, and this thing just like lit the match. And so then I went down to the festival and I met them, and Sister Donna Moniz came up and chatted me up, and I learned who they were and what they were, and I was like, right on. But I was living back in New England at the time. So, you know, this is like a one-shot thing. And as I turned to leave, he said, well, can I kiss you? And I was at the time too young to know how to say no. And so he kissed me and slipped me the tongue. And that was my first kiss from a man ever. And my impression of my first kiss was, bleh. I was not attracted to him. God bless his heart. I like to say that in 1982 in San Francisco, when so many people were unfortunately infected with the destructive virus, I was infected with something that turned out very beneficial. Cut to 1995, and I'm in Los Angeles, and I'm in a queer theater group called Fabulous Monsters, based on queerness and the radical fairies, and I'm performing at important LGBT spaces like Highways Performance Space in Santa Monica. Sister Candy, I'd done a couple of charity shows with a guy that I knew. I was standing in line to meet Greg Louganis, and this cute blonde guy I chatted up behind me had friends in this group called Catalyst, which was an LGBT organization in the San Gabriel Valley. And he like and got me involved with these charity drag shows. So I got seen by these people, and one of them, Sister Candy, called me up. December 10th. And he had been to San Francisco and seen the sisters. And like me, his match had been lit in the bathroom trying to get rid of a fart.
Well,
and he said, you know, have you heard of the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence? And I was like, oh, fuck yes. And he's like, well, I'm going to start a house of them here in LA. I think you'd be good at this. Do you want to help? And I was like, let's see, be life of the party, change the world for the better, be as queer as I want to be, get attention. Yeah. So that's just, I grew up back east, a very liberal, thorough education and upbringing. And it was always about using knowledge and art to, or whatever you do, to change the world, even if it's only one person. If you change one mind or heart, then whatever your endeavor is has been worthwhile. It was how we felt. And so this was a way to apply that mission that I had already to give it a real home. And it's funny because once I started being Sister, I didn't start being Sister Unity, as you've said. My original name was Sister Shiva Tapioca, wet nurse to the infant of Prague. But don't you know, the little baby sucked it all dry. And so I had to move on from my occupation and pick a new name. And I chose one that is not in any way amusing.
It actually, you know, it is actually slightly amusing.
Is just it so amusing, you know, or is it just that everyone's laughing at me?
No, we would never laugh at you.
Community, okay? It's fine.
No. Ugh. So do either of you have a quick, maybe PG-13 pride story?
Well, my last pride that I went to, I wore a Speedo and the full headpiece regalia. So that was interesting.
Okay.
So that one's out. Long Beach. No, that one's out. Yeah,
I said PG-13.
Mm-hmm. That one's out. Okay. That one's actually illegal. Fifth Amendment.
Yeah. You don't want to discriminate against yourself.
A pride story as a sister or a pride story personally?
Either one. This is pride. So, you know, let it be proud of, sort of proud of what you did.
Pride. Whenever I was 7 years old, like I said, I had lesbian parents. All right. So we decided that we were going to go to a beach. I had no idea how to express gay, what, you know what I mean? Like, I kind of understood it, but there it was, rainbow flags, people everywhere. And I'm just like, oh my goodness. I asked, is it Rainbow Day? And she's like, yeah, honey, it's Rainbow Day. And that was my introduction to really the gay community besides the few lesbian friends they had. So,
okay.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes those first prides do, you know, change the world.
I know that for the rest of my life, eventually I could be in a very accepted, embracing community. So I saw that and I was like, look, there's something to go to. So it helped me a lot throughout my development.
I think my pride story would be in some ways an anti-pride story. Here in Los Angeles for about 3 years, there's an organization that puts on the big LA Gay Pride. Mm-hmm. It's called Christopher Street West. And for 3 years, a bleach-haired event planner had taken over the board of Christopher Street West and had tried to turn Pride from being an all-inclusive community festival to being a high-priced, high-ticket Coachella music festival that just happens to be gay. And we didn't like that at all, and we withdrew our participation and our support, and we're actually planning a protest. We, instead of walking in the parade as we always had done, we decided we would walk the parade backwards carrying cardboard coffins, sort of saying this is the death of Pride. The tickets are so high that homeless people and poorer people and young people who don't have jobs can't really afford to get into the festival. It is supposed to be a beacon, a lighthouse for them, welcoming them into the community and into their own identity. And it's not now. So that's why a coffin. Well, at 5 a.m. that night morning of the parade, thank God I'm a night owl who plays video games. I saw online the horrific story of the Pulse nightclub shooting in Orlando, Florida.
Yes.
And I immediately contacted the other sisters and I said, are we really going to carry coffins? I think that's not a good idea. And so we took a quick sort of online through email straw poll that we wouldn't do that, but we still wanted to do something. And so we set up a little, I have these little TV tables, and we set up a little mobile altar. And some of us brought brass bells to ring, and we made a quick sign commemorating those who had been slaughtered because of homophobia. And we didn't say a word, we just made up, and we stood near the end, but right where the crowds were, the thick in the intersection of San Vicente and Santa Monica Boulevards, which, if you know West Hollywood, you know Boys Town, a historic gay community, it's the heart of the gayness of that place. So we stood right there with our altar and rang bells, and someone brought fresh flowers and put them at the altar, and we didn't say a word. We just were solemn, and the parade went right by us, and it was very rewarding to watch people who would also, all these people had changed their participation to honor the dead and defy hatred, and to see them acknowledging the statement, and to feel like there was a crowd to parade connection where all of us were acting on and expressing our enormous grief and anger. And this is a thing that the sisters sort of position themselves to do, and oftentimes do in ways that they never expected. They end up being a sort of locus for some experience or meaning or feeling that the community at large is having. Because we do a ritualized, and theater and ritual are right next door neighbors.
Right together.
Right. Because of that, and because we adopt all of this ritual adaptation of our persona, our look, and our behavior, we become a locus or even a movie screen onto which people project their inner experiences about homosexuality, about trans and gender identity, about creativity, about being other, about being marginal. All of these things sort of end up on us. So that was probably the most striking experience of that behavior during a pride.
Well, and just the effect that you had on everybody. And sometimes you don't have to say a word to make a point.
Yes, I think that some of our strongest messages and sometimes our funniest shticks have been without speaking.
Which is, you know, which is more powerful.
Right, which is why for the last few minutes of this radio broadcast, we are going to remain completely silent.
Wow.
Platypus!
That's going to be interesting.
Yeah, well, the game.
I know that online, the sisters of the Los Angeles House have put out an official statement about the Black Lives Matter. And it's on their social media pages. And I know that you're doing the wonderful event on Friday. Online, and will that be seen on your Facebook page, or where can people see your event on Friday?
Well, all of the individual sisters who are involved are putting on our Facebook pages. The house is also going to put it through. You should be able to actually find it now. And it'll be a Facebook Live event. So it'll be directed through our channel, and it'll be there probably through an event.
Okay. So I'll have people connect and find the event on your Facebook page. But I'd like to give you the opportunity now to read that statement because I know how important it is. And I think this is something that people need to hear. Because sometimes...
Do you like to do it or me?
Okay, if you don't mind, I'll read down through the bullet points and then you take it from there. Is that,
sure.
You want more?
All right. I mean, you can read a statement, but there's so much, it's so much more powerful when you hear it. So that's why I want to give you that opportunity. So
thank you. Well, it came out as a press release. So the headline said, LGBTQ activists, the LA sisters, condemn murders of Black Americans, call to dismantle systems of oppression. And I want to say before I read it that this was written by, Jenna, what, five different people?
Yeah, at least.
Yeah. And Jenna was instrumental in coordinating, putting it all together. Thank God someone knows how to work Google Docs, because I don't. So here is the statement by the LA Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. The Los Angeles Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence decry and condemn the police brutality resulting in the death of George Floyd, a Black American hostilely seized under false pretenses, along with Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor and Tony McDade, all Black members of our community, slain needlessly and wantonly by police. We understand the explosive rage ignited by generations of police murders of hundreds of Black citizens all across the country, and we support the ongoing protests. Through the powers of voting, lobbying, and organizing, Americans must force our social system to change. We call for the following. We immediately call for police to stop their practices of anti-Black racism and violence against Black bodies. We call for civilian oversight of police actions along the lines recommended to the city of Los Angeles by the federal government after the 1992 riots. We call upon the government to reduce police militarization by removing military equipment from all police resources. We call for retraining of police officers at all levels in practices of de-escalation, racial sensitivity, minority community awareness, and personal, moral, and psychological responsibility. We call upon city, county, and state governments to reallocate excessive funding from police wish lists to community betterment, education, employment assistance, housing, nutrition, mental health, and beyond. Jenna?
We call for self-restraining policies and practices by all police departments, such as mandatory body cameras, bans on dangerous chokeholds and restraining techniques, a ban on indiscriminate pepper spray, tasing, or use of firearms, and penalties for all infractions of these. So take these previously godforsaken year, one that is already characterized as one catastrophe after the next, and build upon the solutions that are being presented in front of you today so that its narrative will ultimately change. By participating in protests from coast to coast, vast groups of people are taking a unified stance against institutional racism, racial bias, oppression, and profiling found rampant in our society and expressed explicitly through police brutality and within the prison industrial complex. Join in and continue this movement until legislation calling for police reform and equal human rights are approved, and then keep it the law by voting at all levels come November. Do not squander the opportunities that recent tragedy and centuries of abuse have inspired. The fight for liberation is not yet over. The Black Lives Matter movement is an important fixture in our society, which deserves the utmost attention. Reassuring you that the future is created through our efforts and actions we take today, the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence will continue to show our direct support through attending demonstrations, demanding police and prison reform, and passionately fighting for the lives and fair treatment of our brothers and sisters of color, especially trans folks who endure harsh interactions with society. Passivity in the face of racist expression is violence. Saying Black Lives Matter means nothing if we are not actively working to dismantle the long-existing systems of oppression. We ask you, how do you want to remember your involvement today?
Thank you. Thank you, sisters.
Thank you, Shirley, for the opportunity to make our statement.
Of course. And thank you for coming on my show, Sister Unity and Sister Je ne sais quoi. I will have all the information on my Facebook page and on my website for where people can find you and find the event on Friday, which is so important, and the event on Saturday, which, you know, you may not consider as important, but we have to find time to laugh too. It's so important. So I'd like to thank you too for coming on the show, and I will definitely see you two later.
Oh, gee, are we going out for hamburgers?
Not today, but hopefully soon when we can leave the house.
I promise I won't cough on your buns.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us on.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, as most of you know, I have been trying to keep up with those virtual prides, and they are popping up like crazy. So please, check in your area. Look at virtual pride. I know that you will find something close to your area. And I'd also like to thank the BAMIT app, which has a great deal right now for new clients of mine. So if you'd like to contact me with questions or to set up a hypnosis session or just tell me a fabulous pride story, I'm at the hypnofairygodmother@yahoo.com. You can also find me on my website, hypnofairygodmother, and I am all over the place on social media. And if you'd like to help support the show, I do have a Patreon account that's got some great perks, including shout outs. And, I can tell people about your event like I do with the sisters. So thanks for tuning in. Remember to tell your friends about the show and, take a long, long, deep breath, hold it in, and exhale with a smile, and I will see you all next week. Thank you for joining me.
You're listening to the Hypno Fairy Godmother Show with Shirley Yance, only on LA Talk Radio.